And we started leveraging that as part of our core architecture. And we like to say we liked it so much, we saw the benefits so much, we bought the company.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Cloud Chat with Stefan and Matt. I'm one of your hosts, Stefan Stelter. Good to see you all.
And my name is Matt Brown. Very nice to see you. I missed the last episode, Stefan.
I know, we missed you. But Eduardo and I had a good time talking about the C-Series. There's a bezel. I said there knew there'd be one. We are
it was an awesome episode. Today,
Sean Harris. Sean, hey, tell Sean. Us a little bit about what you do for NetApp and how long you've been with us and all of that goodness.
Hi, guys. I am the developer relations lead for Spot by NetApp. I handle outreach and advocacy and working with practitioners to adopt the Spot platform and to find ways to use it more to maximize their cloud operations.
Out of curiosity, is that like after a customer has said, I want to go with Spot? Or is that like in the, hey, customers who have an interest in Spot, they're going to talk to you to get a better understanding of the value it can bring?
So that's a great question. I do both. I do pre-sales, I do post-sales, I do community-related stuff, just talking to practitioners about the goals, the topics, and the gains that you can get by optimizing your cloud environments.
I love it. Outstanding. And
I've been here very for about, relevant in this day and age. Yes.
Absolutely. I've been at Spot for about 9 months since September of last year. Prior to that, I've been an IT practitioner, everything from a help desk guy to a DevOps engineering and platform engineering team lead over the last 20 years. Started really in the cloud in 2015, really just working with how to migrate workloads, helping companies find that cloud-first mindset. And so joined here just because I got tired of the DevOps on-call life and wanted to use my technical skills in a little bit of a different way. So I joined a selling organization and now
welcome.
I'm here to evangelize.
Yeah, thrilled to have you. Thrilled Thanks. To have you. This is fantastic. So interesting topic today. And we wanted to talk a little bit about repatriation. To repatriate workloads or not repatriate? Is that the question? Not that is the question. Is that the question? Turn it on its head a little bit. Why is repatriation even a thing?
Yeah, well, it is a thing. And I think we all see it in different shapes and forms in all the customers we talk to. You know, a lot of customers were on a kind of a, I don't mean to say it, but kind of a blind mandate to go to the cloud. And then they got the cold, hard reality that if you do it without thought, it can be very expensive. And I would argue then are making another reaction and now pulling things out of the cloud just as abruptly as they put in. And I think what we want to talk about today is, you know, given that's what we're seeing, maybe add some thought to that and maybe see what we can do to maybe make recommendations to help customers if they are in one of those situations.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to mention the forcing function for some of the rush to the cloud, right? The cloud's been a thing before everybody went remote, and then all of a sudden everybody went remote. That seemed to definitely cause some changes. Is that something you see, Sean, in your conversations with customers?
For sure. And as a practitioner that had to move everything to the cloud when the pandemic hit, our mandates were one day we're working in the office and the next day we're shifting everything to the cloud and trying to enable everybody to work remote. So we're signing up for new services. We're forklifting applications as fast as we can without any thought to the way to forklift those workloads over. And I think the mistake that a lot of places made was they just went with the one-to-one server strategy. I have a business intelligence server. I need to move the whole server all at once onto one server that's identical without taking into account the shared model and the optimization models that
the utilization factors. Yep.
Right. And so now we're seeing people, as we're starting to come back to the office, people want to be back in the office. We're social animals. But what do we do about the cost? Right? We've taken IT from a capital investment to a capital expense where it's an IT guy with a credit card that can sign up for a service and cancel it. So how do we deal with the complexities of that without having a business interrupting event such as a pandemic or application downtime as we try to figure out where we're going to go from here?
That's it makes sense that there'd be that struggle. And I think we've touched on it quite a bit in previous cloud chats. This idea of understanding, you know, do we cloud to cloud or not to cloud is one of the things that we think a little bit about. And now it's a bit of that other direction that we're considering in this topic. And because of that forcing function, it sounds like some decisions were made hastily. When customers start exploring that and saying, hey, okay, so we rushed because we couldn't get servers on premises, right, because there were supply chain issues, because we needed to refresh things, because it wouldn't run the code that it needed to run, and all of those fun things. We stressed different parts of the organization, rush into the cloud, lift shift, maybe refactored some applications and made some things cloud happy, and decided to containerize things maybe where we could. Which reminds me a lot of some of the NetApp on NetApp work where, you know, hey, here's your traditional application, use containers as microservices to interact with those traditional applications, mm-hmm, and deliver capability. So how are customers looking at this decision point now? Do they repatriate everything? What do they do?
Well, I think that's the conversation. And I think that's part of the thing that we have to talk about is that I think to some extent, I'm seeing almost equal knee-jerk reaction. Now we just got to get out of the cloud. You're like, well, wait, yeah, wait. And I think, you know, part of it is I think a lot of customers aren't aware of some of the tools, solutions, capabilities that are out there to make that a more thoughtful process and maybe even change their minds about moving out of the cloud at all.
Right. And I think businesses have a mandate to make money, right? And
that's why we're all in business.
Right? That's why we're all in business. That's right. And executives have a mandate to maximize their investment. And when you get a 9-figure cloud provider bill and you're trying to figure out where did all this go? Why am I being charged for all this data transfer? Why are these snapshots all piling up? It's all these little things that start that look like cents per gigabyte or cents per gigabit. And then you get petabytes and you're looking at all this data transfer and you're trying to figure out, how do I wrangle this in? How do I figure this out? Well, the knee-jerk reaction says, let's forklift everything back to our on-prem data center. But there's a lot of implications that while you're trying to maximize that return on investment, I think there's a lot of complications that people really aren't ready for when it comes to how it's going to impact their business for a second time in a 3-year period.
Yeah, I suppose the responsibility needle shifts a bit too, right? If an organization, say, started to containerize some things, refactor some applications, and they get into the cloud-centric ownership model of things, where that line of ownership sits, if they want to bring it back on premises, there's a whole lot of things they haven't thought about because they're not bringing it back to a traditional on-premises infrastructure. They're going to have to figure out, okay, which Kubernetes are we going to do and how are we going to provision the underlying hardware, because they've never had to do that in the cloud sense.
Right.
And the cloud providers are really good about making Kubernetes especially a very complex topic when you get into it, right? Unless you've got a Kubernetes guru on your staff, resetting up Kubernetes from the ground up isn't as easy as running some kind of infrastructure as code template and having all that security, all the security apparatus, all the operational apparatus, and all of the ancillary support that you need to run a complex containerized environment like that at the ready, right? There are weeks, there are months, there are changes that have to be made. And I just think that we have to really discuss, how do you optimize the cloud for your specific operations, and how do you optimize the cloud generally? And we talk a lot about the generality of optimization, but we ignore the places that can't go back to the cloud because they've turned their on-prem data center into office space to make room for employees to have come back to the office. So now you're looking at having to go find a colo to put all your gear in and move all that gear. It's just, there's a lot of moving parts, and I think that we just need to have an honest discussion about it.
So Sean, can you give us kind of some ideas of the things that one should consider, or maybe some best practices for, you know, evaluating those workloads before they bring them back?
Yeah. So like I mentioned kind of earlier, the thing that people like to do is say, I've got this server that's running this specific, mm-hmm, application. And when you get into a cloud model, you're able to use more of the resources. As a practitioner, I never like to see any of my server environments get over 50% utilization, because then you start running into problems. And the IT guy in me says, oh, we're over 50%, shut it down, expand. With the cloud, have the ability to have multiple applications on the same instance at the same right. time and get a lot more utilization. So look at your utilization. Look at how your application is really working. Look at the IO that's going through. Look at all these different metrics that make you that keep you up at night, and try and figure out the best way to not do a one-for-one virtual machine or server to another virtual machine or server, but look at how to stack those applications. Learn how to use the low code, no code services that allow you to run functions for short bursts of time and use those to run, because all of those can run .NET code. They can run Python. They can run a whole host of languages. And so you can uncouple your underlying technology stack and put them into environments where you don't need to have a server running 24/7 to do a 20-minute process. You run it as an application function, and all of a sudden it shuts itself off and you don't need to worry about it until the next time it has to run. And then the other thing that you look at is the elasticity of the cloud. How can I scale up? How can I scale down? How can I scale out? And how can I scale in, right? Those are two. Scaling up means you're changing your virtual machine size. Scaling out means you're adding more machines behind a load balancer. And you really can look at the ways that your application responds to a load balanced environment before you have to start going up and cranking up the horsepower in the machines.
Excellent.
So how does
storage and one more thing before I move that, storage is another big one. Look at your storage types, right? You need to have the fastest disk for all your workloads, right? Your snapshots don't need to be stored on the hottest tier of storage. You can dumb those down, or not dumb them down, but you can reduce the warmness of that data and make it so that you're paying less per byte for your storage and using the right kind of storage bandwidth on the backplane. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Well, I think where we're both going to go is, so what does NetApp have to offer in terms of helping customers in this moment of should I repatriate or not repatriate thought process?
That's a great question, because a lot of people look at NetApp and I tell them that I work for NetApp and they look at me and they're, you're a storage guy? No, I'm not a storage guy. Well, I used to be a storage guy. I cut my teeth on NetApp hardware. So it's kind of interesting that I've come back to working for NetApp. But NetApp has seen this movement. And so they made a real investment and made several acquisitions into the cloud ops space, moving away from the traditional storage operations and on-prem network operations. But they've also, at that same time, been thinking of innovative ways to build out the storage side to work better with the cloud. And so NetApp has the mainline storage offerings that you're used to, and ONTAP Cloud and CVO and FSx, right? These are all hybrid cloud options that will allow you to tier that information from your on-prem environment or your on-prem storage out to the cloud provider. But then they've also specialized in cloud operations. How do we make the cloud financially feasible? How do we make it operationally feasible? So they've bought a bunch of companies and they've rolled them into the Spot by NetApp portfolio. So Spot by NetApp consists of the main Spot portfolio. So Ocean, Elastic Group, and Eco, Eco is the FinOps tool. And then we have Cloud Checker that does cloud governance and a little bit of FinOps. And then we have Instacluster, which is open source database management, right? So managing Apache Spark, managing Cassandra, managing Postgres, managing MySQL as a service to take that load off of you, because databases are time consuming and hard to manage. And so if we can make that easier for customers to focus on application delivery and software delivery, it makes it a lot easier. And they fit hand in hand with the Blue XP line that NetApp released last year from an observability and monitoring capabilities.
I think if there's some value in sharing a bit of the NetApp on NetApp story on Spot. And did you have that moment of, oh shoot, here's our giant cloud bill, Matt? Did that happen for you? Or
it's interesting. I don't want to say that we had foresight or anything, but we were a little bit more careful in our first approach to the cloud. And we knew that costs really mattered to us. In fact, Spot, as Sean was just talking about, really popped up on our radar early on, actually before NetApp even acquired it, because we were worried about the bills. We knew that was going to be a concern. And we started leveraging that as part of our core architecture. And we like to say we liked it so much. We saw the benefits so much. We bought the company. So we've kind of avoided that initial sticker shock. Now, that said, that's not the only piece to the puzzle, but it definitely has helped us in our ongoing cloud journey.
Right on.
And to put some real numbers there, to the tune of almost 70% off of reserved instances. So that's what we've been consistently seeing in our environment. And again, it becomes core to our cloud migration strategy to have that built in, to have that in our core architecture, to be able to leverage exactly as Sean was saying, the ability to scale up and then having things even like Cloud Checker to help us manage when we need to scale down, ensuring everything's turned off properly.
And Cloud Checker's other big thing is the security component that I think gets overlooked a lot when we talk about cloud, because people don't realize, and I'm generalizing here, but people don't usually realize what goes into some of these compliance programs that they sign up for. ISO, SOC Type 2, SOC 2 Type 1, right? I can list them off, but Cloud Checker has a unique feature where it allows you to keep track of your cloud environment, because as DevOps evolves and moves to platform engineering, DevSecOps becomes a thing. And so your security apparatus and how you secure your workloads in the cloud, because you're hosting real data, you're hosting customer data that you can't have exposed. And so Cloud Checker really helps with that in a way that I don't think we talk about enough, because it makes it so you can automate some of your security response and keep tabs on where you are in your security posture.
I think I have to bring a bit of the on-premises perspective to the conversation here as well. So I always go to BlueXP observability, known as Cloud Insights, as a way to help customers understand their on-premises and cloud environments, but really to help them understand whether it's NetApp gear or Hitachi gear or LEMC gear or other competitor gear. We can understand what's going on with it, whether it's compute, application layer, network layer. We can really give an understanding of what you've got on premises today, and if you've got access capacity to help you with that repatriation question. And certainly also, as you highlighted, Sean, that in the BlueXP portfolio, we have classification, which can help identify redundant data, can help you with some of those governance challenges. I'm wearing no-show socks today. That's a different kind of sock, I think, than the socks you're talking about. But it really feels like there's a holistic approach that the customers need to be taking as they consider this big question of ours. So it almost sounds like there's an order of things that they ought to consider before they really ask their questions around repatriation, to repatriate or not repatriate. It sounds, Matt, you're advising that should not be the question exclusively. It shouldn't be one thing. It's not a pendulum swinging. It swung into the cloud. We got to swing it back on premises. Like we've been saying quite a bit on this podcast, it's picking the right workload. But before you even do that, you know, most of our conversations were swinging into the cloud, and it was understand your workloads, understand which workloads make sense to move into the cloud. But now we're talking about the reverse, and it sounds like there's some steps folks should take before they even get started thinking about repatriating a workload. And it sounded like, Sean, optimization is the first step there.
I think the first step is be aware. You've already made kind of a quick decision that resulted in maybe some negative results. Well, don't make a quick decision again. Know that there's a lot of tools out there that can actually help make this more a thoughtful of approach. And know that there's tools there to actually help you with some of those costs. And then get into a mindset of, you know, what really should be in the cloud and maybe what should come home once you make that informed decision. And I know, Sean, we have a wealth of tools to be able to enable customers like us to be able to do that.
We do. And I think that you make a good point about knowing what you have, because by the time that you get into a complex multi-account strategy, right, we were seeing people slowly move to the cloud, adopting it, finding new ways to use it. But then, like I said, in March 2020, everybody had to do everything in the cloud right away.
Immediately.
And I think that's what has set NetApp apart, just from a thoughtfulness standpoint and saying, here's what you have in the cloud. Here are tools that you can use to see what's happening on both sides of that lens. If you're a cloud first company and you're looking at your cloud cost, how can you control it? Well, the easiest answer is start to eliminate waste, right? And by waste, we mean extra data, duplicate data, which we have tools for. Waste from a compute usage standpoint. How many RIs did you buy on a three-year contract that you didn't plan on buying or didn't need after a certain amount of time? Well, NetApp has tools that can automate the sell-off and transfer those RI contracts. So you can sell off 3 months remaining on a contract and get some real financial gains and really optimize unused resources and stuff that you haven't touched, because I hate to say it, developers and DevOps and platform engineers teams forget what they have running sometimes, and you've got virtual machines that are running. Well, NetApp has tools and the Spot portfolio that will let you scale to true zero so that you only need to use the resources that you want. And then just use the dynamic tools. We have an AI model inside of the Ocean or the Spot platform that goes in and uses 8 years of data, 155 million machines that we're controlling, that we're managing right now for our customers, that will allow you to go in and make better decisions from a data-driven standpoint to how to optimize your cloud. And then as you grow out the cloud, understand what you're getting into. The cloud providers have a vested interest in keeping you as customers. They don't want to see you leave. Moving is hard. And so they're going to work with you to make sure that you're financially optimized in the best way possible as well. And so don't forget your partners on your cloud providers as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you can delve in more.
yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you want to right size all of these resources that are in the cloud, and in so doing, you're right sizing your bill that you got from that that big sticker shock. And once you get the bill right sized, you really understand what your true costs are in the cloud. Then try and figure out which ones make sense to repatriate, if any. You might find that you get costs in your check. If we're going a 70% reduction, that might be enough to leave everything exactly as it is.
And Matt, you mentioned the 70% savings that you guys were seeing at NetApp IT with Spot. I also thought that those numbers were crazy and that nobody would go out and really say we're saving people 70%, but I've seen 70, 80, 90% when you get fully optimized and allow the automation tools to do their job of automating the low hanging fruit. I've really seen 70, 80, 90% cuts in bills, and it makes your operations more agile, and it makes your CFO and your finance department really happy when you're getting those savings.
Thanks for this conversation, Sean. Everyone, note that your NetApp partners have capabilities here to help you leverage NetApp technologies inside of your cloud environments, inside of your on-premises environments, to do all of the fun things that we talked about today. We appreciate, again, Sean, thanks for your participation today. Great seeing you, Matt, and we'll catch you all on the next one.
Remember, like, subscribe, and comment.
I am out of practice with all things social. You can tell. Yes, like,
but definitely comment, see you next time.
Love it. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll catch you on the next one.